life in simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Needless to say, the beast was stunned. A whip crack ripped his rumpet tail, and the beast was done. He asked us, be you angels? And we said, nay, we are but men. Rock.
Hey, are you going to sing along with that, John?
I always sing along to that.
Actually. I think I'll just pause for a little bit and let you go. You know, that was beautiful. That was like music to my ears. That was fantastic coming live from Egypt. Folks, this is Scotty Roberts live from Wisconsin with my cohort, Dr. John Ward, over there live on the Nile at 4 a.m. Egypt time. John, how you doing?
I'm actually quite all right this morning. I thought I was going to be tired. I was up at 3 o'clock this morning and I was sat here and I'm thinking my head kept on headbutting the desk and I didn't have enough coffee. And then I stubbed my cigarette out of my hand for some reason. I don't know why I did that. And it's cold.
I think you were just proving to yourself how manly you were. Put it out in the palm of your hand.
Oh, I just saw a shooting star.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
Say a wish. Say a wish.
I can't tell you. If I tell you, then it won't come true.
Exactly. I'll say one instead. There you go.
All right, you say one.
It's done. It's done. I've done it.
All right, fantastic. Well, fantastic. All right. Hey, folks, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We got a great guest coming on after the bottom of the hour. He's been here before. You know, Barry Fitzgerald. He'll be joining the show after the bottom of the hour break. In about 28 minutes, something like that. And
chained and ball and chained Barry Fitzgerald.
Yes, the ball and chained Barry Fitzgerald. So that's when he'll be joining us after the bottom of the hour. And until then, you've just got John and me, like you have for the last couple of years, at this half hour slot on your Sunday evening or Monday morning, depending on where you'll be.
I apologize for that, ladies and gentlemen, that you still have to listen to Scotty's monotone diatribe. I'm sure he'll add some biblical rhetoric somewhere along the line. But
I did want to open our show tonight with a passage from the book of Psalms.
Yeah. You know where you can stick that, don't you?
No, actually, I didn't. I was going to. So.
The wind has changed direction this morning. I've got mosques going off in all directions at the moment. It's quite nice.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't know if you can hear that, but there we go. So, what's happening in the good old United States of America? I did see that good old Hillary has actually put her hat in biblical rhetoric somewhere along the line.
I did that. I did want to open our show tonight with a passage from the book of Psalms. Sorry, I had a little interference there. I was hearing myself talk, and I thought, that doesn't normally happen until I'm alone at night and staring at the ceiling at 3 a.m. But yes, she, via social media, she announced her, and I missed it. I was doing something, I think it was raking leaves or something. So I missed Hillary's announcement. But thought that was a very interesting way to announce that you're going to run for the president of the United States on a Sunday afternoon on social media, pre-recorded social media, nonetheless.
And join the journey, so she says.
Oh, is that what she said? Join the journey.
Join the journey. She's going to be the champion of the American people. And she said something. She said she made reference to the elite, as they always do, but there's far too many elite at the top and they're creaming the American economy and so forth and so forth, and that they're taking all the money. And even though you've made great strides in clawing back from the recession, there's still a lot of work to do.
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there that believe she is one of the elite of she comes from one of the elite families. As one of the senators, one senator said, I just saw a quick clip, so I'm not sure who it is off the top of my head. But he said, I think the nation is really tired of having two families running in the top seat of the office. You've got the Bush family and then you've got the Clintons. It's been that way since the early 90s. Well, actually, the mid 80s. Late 80s. There we go, to be to be positive.
So is Jeb not running for president?
Oh, Jeb is running. Jeb Bush is running, the brother of George W. And
who's your money on then this year?
Who's my money on? This is a tough call because the last election, my money was Obama wasn't going to be reelected because there was too much of the country that did not want him back in. But there he is. He's in again. And he's only got 2 years left of this term, maybe a little shorter now. But so my money, I am not a Jeb Bush supporter. Frankly, I don't care how good Jeb Bush is to the conservative cause or to the Republican cause or to the cause that is anti-Obama administration or Obama-supporting type of cause. I hate to just say it's Democrats and Republicans. There's more to it than that. But I tend to think that Jeb Bush shouldn't be elected president. I really think he shouldn't have even put his hat in the ring.
Well, yeah, I can see your point of view. I mean, for me, there doesn't seem to be a good, strong candidate out there.
There's a potential candidate who hasn't declared that he's running, but I thought he would make a good candidate just from what he would bring to the table. And I've already... Is that who?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No, not Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger can't run for president by our laws because he was native born, not Kenny Rogers. Although he could probably qualify, he probably wouldn't get elected. Some of the other guys running, you know, Ted Cruz has announced his candidacy. He's pretty good. I like him. There are other candidates out there. Ron Paul has Dr. Ron Paul, as he is. He dropped the senator and put the doctor moniker up there. He would like to run. I think he would make a good president. It would definitely be a different kind of presidency than the Obama presidency.
He hadn't been endorsed yet.
I don't know if he's been endorsed yet or not now in the last day or two. But I do know that he came out the chute running and everybody was already criticizing him for being thin-skinned or losing his cool during interviews or being misogynistic because he talked down to a couple of women anchors that had interviewed him over the last year. And for me, that's a bunch of hooey. Ron Paul does what just about everybody else would like to do. And that is he's in an interview and somebody keeps rifling him with questions, won't let him answer. And he actually shushed a female host on primetime television. He just shh, let me finish. And, of course, that's been interpreted as his misogyny coming through. And weak-skinned, he can't handle an interview and things like that. And I think that's a bunch of bunk, but I think he can hold his own just fine. This is going to be, I got to tell you, this election cycle is going to be almost more out political war than the last two. It's going to be whether or not the country is going to endorse the Obama administration by reelecting to the office somebody that either his office endorses or that is part of his party. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I personally rather like Donald Trump, who has not put his hat in the ring officially yet. Part of the criticism of Trump is that
interesting turnout for the events, wouldn't it?
That would be very interesting.
I would like to see him because, I mean, he's got the money and the clout to actually do a great presidential run.
Yes,
it would be interesting to see what his mandate would be, though, on the world stage, how he would perceive the American what's the word I'm looking for? Economic stance, especially within Europe. That would be interesting.
I think he would hold his own very well. As he has put it, he said, first of all, he's an entrepreneur that has made good. He's worth billions. He's somebody that will self-fund his campaign. He is somebody who said, he's basically a no-nonsense kind of guy. Where he will come in and he says, if this needs fixing, this is the way we're going to fix it. And so we're not going to play political. He says, I won't play political games. And he said, I'm sick of political games. He has done this in the last two elections, in 2012 and in 2008. And The problem with that is that he looks now like he's somebody that wants to be, he's a big name, he's a celebrity, he's not just a businessman, he's a celebrity status, and that he's in there just trying to make a name for himself, not make a name, because he's already made it. He's trying to just bring attention to himself is the accusation. Oh, that's fine. You know, he's saying it again. This is strike three, you know. He's not going to do it. Now, he did announce that he would be announcing either on June or July, that he will be throwing his hat in to the ring. And now, if he actually does that, I think he's going to bring something very good to the table, and I think that he could do a formidable job campaigning against Hillary, and by the way, one of the few presidents who runs on their first name. Other than, we did know Obama was his last name. He didn't run by Barack, and Ronald Reagan didn't run by Ronald, and Bill Clinton didn't run by Bill, and so on and so on. George W. kind of got the W connected to his name, but Hillary Clinton is running as Hillary so far. And she makes some comment, kind of like, I saw her at something and said, "Don't you think," she said to a big audience, "that it's time for a woman to be elected to the office?" And I sat back and I said, if that's all you got going for you, I hope you're bringing a little more to the campaign trail than letting people know
she looks more than a wet kipper slapped on a Sunday around a preacher's face, doesn't she? I mean, she's got a little bit going for her, at least.
Oh, she does. She does. She knows what she's doing in certain sense. She's got.
Yeah. I'm sure. Who's her press secretary? Monica Lewinsky?
I'd rather doubt that one. I saw a very humorous Saturday Night Live sketch on Hillary doing her pre-announcement or her throwing her hat in the ring announcement for today. And I saw a video of it. It was very funny, this parody. So it was interesting. But she's getting hit up on all sides, and especially this thing with the whole email problem.
It really is. It's a bit of a farce, isn't it? I mean, how does somebody have, what was it, 50,000 emails or something on your private email server that she could declare? So we don't know how many she had on all the rest of the emails, but I know there was something like 50,000 that she had to print off or something, or send to the ministry or whatever it is you send your stuff to. So. I can't wait to see it. I must admit, I'd like to see Jeb. I'd like to see what Jeb brings to the table.
Do you think
he's going to bring dad and brother?
I think he's going to obviously make that connection. But I would think the smart thing for Jeb to do would be to kind of stand on his own and just say, "I need to, for the sake of appearances in politics and on the domestic stage, I need to stand as Jeb Bush, not as George W.'s brother and George Sr.'s, George H.W.'s son." He's got to stand on his own, and I think he will work very hard to do that. And I think he's been a very good governor from a very conservative point of view. So I don't know enough about all of his what he's got going for him, but I think he's going to come out and he's going to be his own man.
See, we're so much more civil in the U.K. I mean, because we've got our prime minister elections coming up soon.
I've watched Parliament on TV,
and it's getting rather heated. We're having debates on television now. It's all very exciting. Even Tony Blair, bless him. Got up to the podium and he blasted David Cameron and the Conservative government. Good God, if what we want to see is, we want to see the Labour government kicked out, we want to see the Liberals buried completely. Somewhere offshore would be nice, under a drilling platform would be even better. And let the Conservatives have a really good, damn good old shot at it. I think they've done a really good job so far. We've weathered the storm of what the 2008 recession type thing. Our deficit's not too bad. Our economy is looking pretty sharp. We've got a few problems. But other than that, we're doing rather well. I would like to see the Conservatives win again. Our elections are a little bit less frivolous. We do not sensationalize. We are not American.
You're not American. You do not sensationalize. Yes, I
know what you mean. Well,
Trump.
So, you know, there's another thing that's been going on in the United States that you have probably caught wind of, and that is the shooting in South Carolina of the black man. Scott is his last name. I don't remember his first name. And Slager was the name of the cop who shot him. And there is, of course, all kinds of talk and all kinds of controversy about this.
Controversy.
Well,
I mean, the cop shot the man back 8 times or whatever it was. 8 shots were fired. I mean, we discussed it briefly on the Situation Room on Thursday before I got cut out because my internet was so slow. I didn't have enough coal for the steam-driven apparatus. But from what I gather, and from what I've read and what I've seen, there was an he pulled him over for a tail light. He tried to run from the car. There was a scuffle. A taser gun was used. The taser gun was believed to have been lost in the altercation, and the cop felt his life was threatened. And while the gentleman was running away at a leisurely speed, the cop withdrew his gun from his holster and shot him in the back 8 times.
Well, actually, only 5 times was he hit, but he fired eight shots.
And, you know, to be honest with you, that stinks. I don't care who you are. You do not fire 8 shots at a man in the back while he's running away. You fire at the ground, you fire one shot, you take him out at the knee or at the leg, and you get up off your ass and you go after him. There is no point in drawing your pistol and firing 8 shots at an assailant who is running away, who is unarmed at the time.
Now, the only reason I say it's a controversy is because it's created conversation. It's created heated dialogue across the country because there are people who want to defend his position as a cop to have done what he did. And all I'm hearing, even though people have seen the video that has come along with this, all I'm hearing from people are things like, well, you know, when you run from a cop, you run the risk of doing that and this and so on and so forth. And I said, I think then that's when we have to re-examine how much power and authority the cops have to use deadly force.
That's exactly my point. I mean, it's okay. I understand and I uphold the police officer's stance. If he feels his life is threatened, he has every right to withdraw his pistol.
Right.
But he must use it with due diligence. And that due diligence was not upheld. 8 shots is not due diligence. And there lies the problem. And I quite agree with you, Scotty. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, this, because once you condemn the shooting of the assailant, two, you condemn the fact that he actually fired 8 shots. But at the same time, you've got to uphold the fact that he is a police officer. He is defending the law. But how far does that law stretch to warrant the execution of a man for a broken taillight?
Well, exactly. He got pulled over for a broken taillight. Now, I do know that the police, when they run somebody's license plate, they can also pull up whether or not that person has warrants. And that should appear under their name. Now, we don't know if he saw that ahead of time. According to Slager, he didn't see that ahead of time. He didn't know what this guy had outstanding. And the only thing that tipped him off to make any move at all, if everything was legit from the very beginning, was when Scott got out of his car and bolted. Now, that was a red flag for a cop that he needs to stop him. Now, here is where it gets to be a problem, is that he said in his story, the cop, that Slager took his taser from him. And yes. then so he felt threatened, and he was felt he was in imminent danger. Now, I'll tell you what. I've never been in a position of being a cop where I've had to shoot somebody or feel threatened in that position before. But I'll tell you, if somebody's got a taser gun and he's running away from me and I've got a 9mm on my side and in my hand and ready to shoot, I got to tell you what, I'm not going to be too worried about the guy with the taser who's 30 feet away from me, running away from me. And when I've got, I'm not going to feel very threatened. I wouldn't shoot him. Now, granted, if you're in a heated situation, you're going to have those moments where making tough on-the-spot decisions have to be made. And you might be under mental duress. That's going to be some of the...
I disagree with this, really, because that's where training comes in.
Well, this is that's what I was going to... Exactly.
This is where firearm training comes in. You should be able to make that split-second decision. It's like our troops on the ground. They have to make split-second decisions that can save or condemn their entire platoon. This police officer made the wrong decision.
I agree. Seen the video, by the way?
I have. I was able to watch it live.
Did you see the stance of Slager, the cop, when Scott was running from him? Did you see the form that Scott was running in? Scott is a 50-year-old man, not in the best of shape. He's kind of gangly running away. He's not an athlete doing the, sprinting away from him. He's just running away from the guy. I don't see a taser in his hand, but there is a taser laying on the ground. Now, what we don't see in the video is he said that he believed Scott took his taser gun. But there's the taser laying on the ground behind him. Now, perhaps Scott tried to knock it away. Perhaps he didn't want to get tased again. Perhaps we don't know what happened. Maybe he grabbed it, threw it, and ran. We don't know exactly. But he ran, probably not thinking, I'm going to lose my life today, over back child support and a taillight. And keep in mind, as soon as Slager left his car to pursue him, he made a call in. It's on the dash cam on his police car. He called in for backup because the suspect is running. And so he's got backup on the way. And as it so happened, the backup came in from the direction that Scott had been running just a moment later. And
it is bad decision. That's all this is down to, human error. This is the human component that we will never, ever eradicate from any of our law enforcement or any duty, be that firemen, be that law enforcement, be that army, even be that doctors when they're performing an operation on a patient. We will never eradicate the human factor. And in this case, unfortunately, the police officer reacted without due diligence. He reacted without professionalism.
Yes,
he did. In the heat of the moment, he lost his cool. And that's the end all of it. And I'm afraid he should actually be tried to the fullest extent of the law.
And I agree with that. And frankly, they charged him with murder prior to seeing the video. And all the video has done is just sunk the case in very deep. So I've had a little ongoing debate in my public Facebook about that since I had posted the video a few days ago. And that's just ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. And you've got people attempting very hard to defend this cop's position. And I said, I understand being the devil's advocate in this, but you can't defend his position. No, we can't crawl into his head and know what he was thinking or anything like that. All we know is that if he was guilty of not thinking very fast on his feet and reacting to feeling threatened, then he should not be in the job anyway. You should not have a man or a woman in a job that allows you to have the authority to use deadly force against anyone that you deem necessary, as long as you go by procedure and by your training. If you have that responsibility given to you, then you better damn well have the wherewithal to think fast on your feet. And
I think it does raise the question with regards the due diligence testing, aptitude tests, and so forth, that I think should be either increased within your police force. I know that our police force have it, and this is one of the contentions, that we do not arm our police force in Britain. We have armed response units, and we have armed police at high security emplacements, such as airports and so forth. But we do not have armed policemen on our streets. And I think this is there is something to be said for that. I think there is a serious connotation there. When you start to arm the police who are walking your streets, and I know throughout the whole of Europe, as a Brit, when I see a policeman who has a gun, I do actually feel a little bit threatened, I must admit. And that's just my personal stance, because I've been brought up in a culture where we do not see guns. I'm a shooter myself, as you quite rightly know. And, you know, I've been hunting ever since I was able to walk, and I've got no problem with owning a gun. I've got no problem with shooting. I've got no problem with fox hunting and all of that blah-blah-blah. But when it comes to arming our police force, I think there's a line crossed there, because we don't need it. Even in this day and age, with terrorism and everything else that's going on, I believe that our police force is absolutely amazing. They have their faults. Of course they do. Every police force does. There's always corruptness and certain backhanded deals going on. But that goes on in any walk of life. And I don't, you know, and so again, that's the human factor. There is something to be said for an unarmed policeman who mans the streets.
I agree with you 100%. 100%.
You live in a different, completely different culture where it is your First Amendment to own and carry a gun.
Second Amendment.
I think that puts a different light on it. And again, in England, if we were to walk around armed and we were carrying guns, I'm sure there would be a higher level of gun crime. Because it just goes to, it's just simple equations.
That's right.
It's a difficult one.
In the last 2 minutes before we go to break, I want to shift gears very quickly back to our first topic, where we were talking about the election and the possibility of Donald Trump running against Hillary, against all the other Republican and other candidates that might be coming up. And Sean Coe over in our chat room asks, how can Trump possibly relate to the common person? And I think about that for a second. I said, you know, I'm really kind of tired of that question. No offense to Sean. I'm tired of that question. How can he possibly relate to the common person? Well, how many leaders in government can relate to the common person in the way that some of our population think they ought to? If you've got a billionaire who could bring something very good to the job to fix certain aspects of our economy and so on, let's not get into the litany because we've got very short time here. But if that person can come to the table and offer something that can, that is good for the country, must he be somebody that goes shopping for diapers at the local supermarket? You know, that's the big question that comes in. And I don't think they have to relate perhaps in the way that some people think they have to. I think he can relate in the fact that he built something from nothing, but he's been doing it for 40 years.
Using my own political background, I don't think you have to relate. It helps. Of course it does.
It helps.
But I don't think, in some respects, you need to be able to actually remove yourself from the common populace, because you've got to be able to react and represent every aspect of the general populace. That means the minorities, that means racial multiculturalism. You have to be able to represent every single facet.
I actually think there's not a candidate out there that doesn't relate in some aspects. You know, folks, we got to go out to break. This is Scotty Roberts, John Ward, the Intrepid Radio program. We'll be right back after these messages.
Intrepid Radio is a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Just ask Dr. Ward. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Imagine a place, beautiful, green, sloping mountains, and a rich, mysterious window into our ancient past. It's a culture the likes of which you won't find any place else. And while the place I'm describing is in Vermont, it's also the home of Inner Traditions, publishers of fine books on mind, body, and spirit for more than three decades. Inner Traditions are internationally recognized publishers of everything from occult to esoteric and spiritual books, as well as the leading authorities on alternative health, holistic healing, sacred sexuality, altered states of consciousness, and so much more. And frankly, it's not the kind of information you'll find just anywhere. Exploring the inner secrets of humanity requires thinking outside the box. And when it comes to Inner Traditions, the name says it all. All you have to do to learn more is visit innertraditions.com and you can receive a free catalog that will tell you all about their latest books and newest authors. That's Inner Traditions and Baron Company, publishers of fine esoteric books for more than three decades. Find them online at innertraditions.com.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
Ready for some rollicking adventure? In Scotty Roberts' book, The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, join Irish Rabbit, Tam O'Hare, and his young squirrel squire, Horatio McNutt, as they journey through Scotland of the mid-1500s seeking a small child who's been stolen by the fairy folk. Crafty raccoon pirates, conniving noble wolves, conflicted royal foxes and self-serving religious badgers all stand in the way as their quest brings them headlong into high seas action and supernatural intrigue. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare is in bookstores everywhere and at barnesandnoble.com. This hardcover, lushly illustrated chapter book is the first book in the Tam O'Hare series, so swash your buckle and prepare yourself for a historically rollicking, swaggeringly supernatural adventure. Visit TamO'Hare.com to learn more. You'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
Sticking their fingers in the hole of the dike of humanity, Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward.
Born in the USA, I was born.
ladies and gentlemen, may I say on John Ward's behalf, God save the Queen. Oh, that just rouses me. It makes me wish I was British. It makes me wish I was wearing my Union Jack socks.
Jealousy is an ugly thing, my brother. Jealousy is an ugly thing.
It is indeed. And
It's a privilege to be British. It comes with responsibility, but it is a God-given right. And while we're on the subject of British and the royalty and so forth, I must admit I want to air, personally, I thought there was a tinge of a moment of sadness when Cecil Rhodes' statue was removed from public view in South Africa this week. There was a little bit of a tinge of nostalgia.
You know, this is the first I heard of it, and I can just move right on and talk about Game of Thrones after that. It does nothing to me that Cecil Rhodes' statue was removed from South Africa.
Do you even know who Cecil Rhodes is?
Barely in the outskirts of my brain. It's like, you know, it's like going to, say, London, and then driving all the way out to, say, Bath to look at a statue. That's about how far out of the center core of my brain Cecil Rhodes is.
You are an uneducated oaf,
sir. I am. I am, sir. I am.
Please continue with your Game of Thrones entourage.
Well,
sit here and drink my cup of coffee.
I've actually, for somebody like me who likes that kind of stuff, who was into the Renaissancing, you know, and I was at the Renaissance Fair for, you know, 15 to 20 years playing characters out there, sword fighting, all of that stuff. I've never watched the show.
I can't believe
No. No.
It's an easy show. It should be compulsory viewing for everybody.
Well, I've got some of it recording now so I can watch it, but
it makes the Twin Towers look stupid.
And I will say, I did not wear a kilt most of the time I was at the Renaissance Festival. I wore leathers and I wore black velvet tights and over the knee black leather boots and swords and daggers. So there you go.
Scottian tights, I like that.
Rampant lions and fleur-de-lis.
Did you have little turned up slippers with that?
No. As a matter of fact, I had big boots and I had spurs because I had rank.
You had rank.
I had rank.
And what,
I was a duke.
What rank?
We were going to talk about this at all tonight, but I was Edmund Scroop, the Duke of Abergavenny, Wales.
So you're harking to Britishness.
Yes, I was. It was a very British character.
Playing at being a Brit.
Yes, I was. But I do have some in my lineage, but yes, I was. But we can move on fast from that unless you want to get into huzzah! Huzzah, Your Majesty! Huzzah! Oh, have at thee. Oh, in sooth, good sir. Ah, by what means you do know of my name, I know not, but your eyes do doth betray your wanton nature. Blah. So, there we go. Ah, have at. Give me your blade, sir, and I shall give you mine. Scoundrel. Say nonny nonny. Anon.
Nonny nonny.
Moving right on. Barry Fitzgerald, we've got, folks, we've got him hanging on the line here. And before we bring him in, though, I want to introduce him. There's many of you out there who know who Barry is already. So he needs no real introduction to those of you who know him. But just in case you're out there, you want to know a little something. And I'm pulling this information primarily from his website, charmstealer.com. And so when Barry comes in, I'm sure he'll correct me if anything's outdated here. But he's Irish-born. And he has over 20 years experience.
We won't hold that against him, of course.
And John the Brit will not hold that against him. John the Brit, almost a Welshman. Boy, wasn't that a movie or something? The Brit who went into a lamb fold and came out a Welshman?
No.
Something like that. Anyway, Barry has over 20 years experience within the world of the supernatural, in which he's known and has taken him to all kinds of new levels of intrigue and mystery. This we're going to talk to him about. He appeared in all 56 episodes of Ghost Hunters International, the spinoff show of the Ghost Hunters show on the Sci-Fi Network. And he has this whole progression of things that he's gotten into has led him into authoring of several books on subjects within his field of research, from The Complete Approach, The Influence, My Home is Haunted, Now What? That's a question I have. John, My Home is Haunted, Now What? I'm going to ask Barry about that. He wrote In the Mist of Gods. I remember that one coming out. And Banshee, Searching the She. and The Legend Seekers, and he's got The Council of Three is going to be coming out. And Barry has also been a speaker at the Paradigm Symposium 2014, and he will be again this year at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, as well as the History Trippers, Graylin Report, Megalith, how do you say this? I get all mixed up when I start trying to say this all at once. Ancient Megaliths and Sacred Places of Ireland tour coming up this June. And folks, there are tickets left for that. So Barry's going to tell us about his participation in that and everything else and all about him. So Barry, welcome to the Intrepid Radio program. You're a returning guest. It's good to have you back.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you all?
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Super. Thank you, Barry. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad, but who is this, Scotty? Who's this English person on the line? Who is that?
That would be John Ward.
Oh, that's John.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Hi,
yes.
John. How are you?
He's very English.
I'm doing well, Barry. Remember your place, sir. Remember your place.
Oh, here we go. I'm just going to sit back on this one. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to picture this in your mind. Last October, just before the week before the Paradigm Symposium, I have John Ward staying in my house and Barry Fitzgerald staying in my house. And there was one night where Barry had some concoction he mixed up, but it all started with the basic was Jameson Irish whiskey. And he asked me, he says, "Do you drink Jameson?" And I said, "Yes, does the Pope poop in the woods?" And so he went and we got some Jameson, and John's not a big drinker, but Barry brought out these glasses, full glasses of Jameson mixed with something that he put into it, and then a small little snifter for John because he was English. And the two of them later in the evening could be seen. I did post a picture to my Facebook, these two sitting on the love seat in my living room going at politics, British-Irish politics, with John with his shoes off wearing his Union Jack socks. So that's the kind of evening it was. Do you remember that night, Barry?
Oh, I remember it very well. I'm surprised it didn't end up in bloodshed.
I do remember you going to bed early, actually, Barry, with your
tantrum. I obviously had enough, John.
I think you threw a tantrum at one point.
I think he had his fill. It's when John started putting on his Mrs. Doubtfire impression that Barry said, "Well, that's enough." He says, "I'm off."
But how are you doing there, Barry? I understand you got married in between the great Intrepid radio show.
I did indeed, yes. I got married to Donna, a wonderful woman, who's presently sleeping her life away upstairs.
Well, it's 3:45 your time a.m.?
It's the only hour of the morning, yes.
Yes, I'm sure that you're pretty used to that in the line of work that you've been in, but it's not always good for the wife though to want to sit up at 3:30 in the morning just to listen to you talk.
Yeah, I know. She used to put up with enough of that during the day.
Yes. Now, folks, we do want to say we are on an incredibly international broadcast tonight. We have me in Wisconsin. We've got John over there on the Nile River in Egypt at Gebel El Silsila on his Dahabeya moored at the Spas of Horemheb in Egypt. And we've got Barry over there you're just north of Dublin, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm northwest of Dublin on the west coast.
There you go. So we've got a truly international show. And we've got our engineer, Joel Sturgis, who is at the radio station over there, poised, ready to do everything that we need to have done up in Eveleth, Minnesota. So we've got everybody all over the place tonight. Well, Barry, it's just great to have you. So we want to make some good use of the time, and we're going to keep you as long as we can keep you tonight. And I just want to let folks know, too, that you can post your questions in the chat room tonight. And if you've got a question, just type it out in all caps, and we'll see your question out there. And also, I think we do have a call-in number tonight, but we've got a little strange engineering going on here tonight. So, Joel, if you can type any kind of a call-in number that we have over into the chat room, I would appreciate that. And let's go from here now. Now, Barry, you obviously, let's hit the obvious that most people know about you. They know of you, and we've talked about this kind of stuff before. We'll just spend a couple minutes on this. You've been your introduction to the world... I was going to say to world renown. There we go. in your field has been Ghost Hunters International. And of course, you did a couple of episodes with the Ghost Hunters, and you went on and really were the lead on that show. And tell people a little bit about your experience in there, what brought you to that, what got you out of it, and where you are right now.
Well, what got me into it was a phone call from Los Angeles. They had seen the success of the show that was filmed in Lepp Castle here in Ireland, one of the most haunted castles in Ireland. And the viewing figures for that show were tremendously high. And the idea then was born, well, why not do an international show? And I got a phone call to say, look, we're doing an international show. Would you mind traveling the world, doing what you do, and for us? And I thought about it for all of 30 seconds and said, sure, why not? And that was that.
So would be the answer, yes.
And so following that, we run then for the 3.5 seasons, 50-odd plus shows that was done. And each show primarily is around two locations long, which would take around 2 weeks to film per episode. So it's quite a long time that you dedicate your life to a particular project.
Oh, definitely.
And we travel the world. And looking for these signs of the paranormal, mind you, in its narrowest form, but it was a great experience for me to be able to meet people from different cultures and faiths right around the world, and then eventually we finished filming in October 2011, and. The way things work in Hollywood, we found out about a year later then that the show was dropped, and so that was that.
Well, I want you to talk a little bit about Lepp Castle, because and you brought that up as being the episode that you did, because Lepp is considered to be one of the most haunted castles in Ireland. Tell us a little bit about Lepp Castle, but also I want to let people know that you are going to be. I've spoken with Sean Ryan. Who is the owner of Lepp Castle, and those who've seen you on the shows have seen who Sean Ryan is, and he's going to be doing a dinner for us and doing some entertainment, as well as having just kind of turning the keys over to you and our group on our Ireland tour this June, and you'll be leading a little investigation there. So what draws you to a place like Lepp Castle? Let's get away from just the ghost hunting aspect of it, although that's primarily what people who are interested in seeing you work on there. What is it about that castle that has a draw to it for you personally?
Well, Lepp Castle, like many castles in Ireland, has had a bloody history. But its history seems to have lingered much further and longer than its counterparts. And plus, you've also got this aspect of an entity which is also said to appear, known as the Elemental. Now, this Elemental takes its name from, it's believed to be a fair element, one of four, of course, which were used and vital and utilized. But the thing is about a fair Elemental, they just don't really appear without being summoned.
Now, when you're saying, you're calling that a fire element?
Fire.
Oh, fire element, okay.
Sorry, I apologize for my accent. And John, you can't comment.
That's right. I was going to say a thing other than I didn't understand a word you were saying. Could you please speak up and speak in Queen's English, please?
Oh my.
Please, I thought you were saying a fairy element. I'm thinking a fairy element.
Ignoring John. The fire element, elemental, is something which is summoned and it just doesn't arrive. Now, whenever we go into the history and we start looking at the history of Lepp Castle, before it was burned in 1921, there was a lady who lived there called Mildred Darby. And Mildred wrote several accounts of her experiences and her guests' experiences at the hands of the elemental. And this creature was said to have appeared looking almost like death incarnate, and terrified the life right out of the people. But Mildred, of course, wrote her accounts down, and I have her accounts here, and it does seem to suggest that she was actually mixed up in a lot more than what she tended to write about. In fact, I suspect that Mildred had her hands in the dark arts much more than she was ready to admit.
Sounds like my kind of girl.
Well, there you go. Well, Mildred didn't last too long at the property, because in 1921, of course, there was the rebellion in Ireland, and guys came to the castle and burnt it to the ground, and then came back to try and blow the tower up, but weren't that successful. But the tower itself, the castle and its remains then, were taken eventually by Sean Ryan. There's been a history of activity with Sean as well, because as Sean was started to repair the castle, he believes that he was attacked as well and broke his legs out of it as well. He was knocked off the ladders and things like that. Eventually, peace came to the castle, Sean discovered that the castle itself can be subdued in behavior by the use of music. Sean is an absolutely renowned musician, and his daughter, I must add, is a fantastic Irish dancer, young Kira, and she has even danced for the Japanese emperor.
That makes her have something in common with John. Anyway, go ahead.
The castle itself still possesses a lot of spiritual activity, and that's why, in itself, it has kept its reputation as being the most haunted castle in Ireland.
Well, can I just go back, Barry? Just to recap,
John.
You said that the elemental fire was summoned. Are you saying that Mildred summoned?
Yes, I am. Yes. Uh huh.
And for what purpose? To protect her against the rebellion, or was it before the rebellion?
I believe she was being careless.
So would it be kind of like you see people messing around with Ouija boards nowadays, or doing seances and not knowing what they're doing? That kind of a thing. She just parlor games almost, and ends up summoning something.
I think she was involved a little bit more than just parlor games, but ended up conjuring something which she couldn't get rid of.
Can you elaborate on that? What things do you think she was involved in?
I can't really elaborate any more than that, other than what we can see in her writings, which suggests that she was involved more. And it was at a time when that type of thing was acceptable. You know, you had the Golden Dawn, things like that were still running very, very well in Ireland and everything else.
Well, the Golden Dawn's not exactly dark arts, is it?
No, not at all. But it was something, you know, it was a practice which was acceptable behind certain doors.
Have you researched any connections between Maud and members of the Golden Dawn? I mean, was she? I mean, like Maud Gonne, for instance. Maud was a big proponent of the Golden Dawn, along with Yeats and the rest of the guys. Is there any relationship there at all?
No, Yeats, of course, a Sligo man. I didn't see any connection with Mildred Darby and her husband. Now, none that I could find anyway. But Yeats never visited the castle, that's for sure.
Okay.
But I have to say that Mildred herself, of course, from what I can see in her writings, was involved a lot more. She hinted at a lot more than what she was ready to admit to. And a lot of the writings she did in a pen name, because she didn't want her husband knowing what she was writing about. And it seemed that he was quite against some of the things that she was involved with.
So she was publishing under this pen name, unbeknownst to her husband.
On occasion, yes, she was.
All right.
And did she die in the fire?
No, she didn't. They weren't there in the castle. There was just a butler, if you like. It was customary back then that someone came to your door, then you were to offer them accommodation for the night. And of course, the rap came to the door in the middle of the night, and the butler opened it, and the guys bust in, and that was the job done.
Now that's interesting. Now I would like to know more history about this. Of course, why was that place targeted by, was it by the IRA or the... And why were they targeting that place?
Well, they were targeting many places. It was because they were, of course, connected with the English and everything else at that particular time. And most, quite a lot of those big houses, land estates, were hit and burned, and the people were sent packing.
Okay, well, that makes sense then. Well, now isn't there something about Leap Castle, and I want to ask this specifically because we're going to be going there in June with this tour, and you're going to be leading us there. There's something about the bloody chapel upstairs, correct? And there's an oubliette, is that what they call them?
Yeah, that's it. Teago Carroll. He was the brother. There were two brothers, and then when the father died, it led to a power struggle. During this time, one brother, I believe it was Teague, who had climbed the steps to the chapel at the top, confronted the brother who was a monk, and who was due to inherit the castle. And he was slayed over the altar in the chapel, hence the name Bloody Chapel. Within the castle walls, there's a place called an oubliette, which is a small room of forgetting. At one particular stage, whenever they came to clear out the castle, there were three cartloads of bones that were removed.
From the oubliette.
Walls, from the oubliette, yeah. I find it very strange that back in the day, when someone said to you, oh, let's meet up for a peace banquet, it always ended up in bloodshed. And I often wonder, what were the mentality of the people back then that didn't cop on that this is a trap and not to go?
Yes. Well, you know, every time we've heard about these peace banquets in the past, we hear they get killed, but it shouldn't happen to us this time because this is a really good guy. Well, folks, we're talking to Barry Fitzgerald. He's live with us from Ireland tonight. And we've got, of course, my cohort and partner in crime, John Ward, over there on the Nile River in Egypt. And this is Scotty Roberts right here in Wisconsin. And we're broadcasting the radio program.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you year after year with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens,
archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
For the thousands of wounded warriors returning from battle, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to a civilian job. These extraordinary men and women bring more than just teamwork and inspiration to the workplace. They bring proven world-class job skills. And to ensure proper placement, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right job fit. Talented, skilled, and eager to get back to work, you have the opportunity to hire a seasoned veteran. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home, the brave.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger, as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available and they are already starting to book up. So go to ExodusReality.com and get your place reserved today. That's ExodusReality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about this special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. And what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, in 57's not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Bass Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com, to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
Oh.
being simultaneous broadcast from a hidden cornfield in Wisconsin and some time-forgotten holy of holies in the Theban Mountains of Luxor, Egypt. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
Well, I don't know how intelligent we are tonight, but we sure feel like it. So, John, you feeling intelligent tonight?
Always, brother. Always. You know me? Oh, I'm always on the fingertips of everything, sir.
Yes.
I know. I can see everything coming before you even say.
British, I don't sensationalize the fact that I'm intelligent. It just comes naturally.
What? Well done. I see. I knew all this training would rub off on you one day.
Ah, yes.
Is little Barry still there in the corner somewhere?
I believe huge Barry is over there in the corner somewhere.
Well, yes, not so huge.
Little Barry. Little Barry is right here.
Little Barry Fitzgerald. Yes.
And John, you don't want to mess with him.
Oh, please.
I've thrown the gauntlet for him.
I've met Barry in real life. He's nothing to worry about, really.
Oh, you know, Barry, John, you'll have to get used to the fact that I think maybe you already are, that John likes to say things like that when he's far away.
Well, yeah, whenever he comes to Ireland, he better maybe pull it back a little bit.
Well, that's coming up in June, and I know we've mentioned it already, but let's kind of do that right now. Folks, if you want to come with us to Ireland in June, the 12th through the 23rd, you can still get your tickets at ExodusReality.com. Just click on the Ireland trip link there. And we've got Barry Fitzgerald, John Ward, myself, Micah Hanks, and James Swagger are all your guides. And we've got 15 open seats. Well, we've got less than that now. But if you want to get your ticket, come and get it now while there's still tickets available. That's 2 months away. We're going to Ireland. If you don't have a passport and you want to go with us, you can still get your passport expedited. So there are all kinds of ways to get there. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at the number that is there on the website. You can see the itinerary on the website. And we like to call this an off-the-beaten-path tour. And one of the features of the trip itself is going to be the one evening where Barry is... Well, Barry will be with us every day of the trip, but he is going to take us to some of what he would call and others would call the thin places of Ireland, the going to not just the old megalithic sites, but to some of the places connected with the fae and connected with the supernatural and all of those kinds of things. And Barry will tell you a bit more about those things as we're talking tonight. But if you want to get your ticket and come with us, there's still tickets available. Go over to ExodusReality.com. Or call us on the phone number that's there, and that's actually comes right into my phone. And so I'll be able to share with you any kind of information or details you want.
And so, feel free to ring that number and leave dirty messages on it.
Especially at 2:30 to 3 a.m.
Yes, exactly.
That's when I'll pick it up. Barry, I actually have a question that's come in from Thomas Fusco over in our chat room. He wants me to ask you about your personal experiment in the cave that you went to. He wasn't overly specific there. I think he thinks that his question is going to rattle your memory pretty good. So there was a cave you went to and you conducted a personal experiment. What can you say about that?
Yeah, we've been working with some information and delving into the whole structure of the ancient Irish, what they were doing with their buildings and things like that, and trying to understand it, because a lot of these buildings were built from the premise of a deep spirituality and a connection with the heavens and everything else. But there seemed to be a lot more that was going on. And from our standpoint, we wanted to have a look at these ancient passage chambers. And, you know, the question has to be asked, passageway to where exactly? I was working with Legend Seekers with my co-author, Cormac Strain. Legend Seekers is a revitalization of the ancient Irish legends and myths, and some not so ancient. The first volume of stories went out and are available through our bookstore. One of these stories took us to this place in Donegal, which was known as being a doorway to another world. And through our experiences there, which folks can read about, I'll not go into it in any detail here, they can read about it on Legend Seekers, the first volume. I ended up having an experience which allowed me to see what was on the other side of that doorway. And that changed the course of my life, if you like, almost immediately from that particular point.
But yeah, I'm assuming that means you found out some information about what was behind that door.
Yes, I did indeed. Yes. Uh-huh. I might add, and I may as well take this opportunity to say that that I write about it in my latest book, the Council of Three, which is now released. That speaks about these entities which hide behind the doorway. And I might add, it's something that we should be exceptionally careful about. I know that on my Facebook, folks have been asking me, what does the symbol mean on my Facebook? I have to say that I've spoken to a few people since then, but the symbol itself, which is two horizontal lines, this other vertical line coming out of it, wavy vertical line, it's actually a warning. It's a warning of what's behind the doorway, and something we should heed. But what we wanted to know, and what Thomas is reaching at, is the experiments that were done to try and help us understand the chambers themselves, and what was going on with these Neolithic Irish, and what they were doing, and how they were activating these doorways to other places, and what it was doing to us on a biological level. And it was remarkable to see that this archaeological acoustics was starting to take form right across the world, and we were starting to see similarities between not only the Irish, the ancient Irish culture, but other cultures as well, right into Peru as well, which was remarkable. But from our perspective, we needed to understand the entire chamber itself. And whenever we did that, we started to see, hold on a second, this particular chamber is shaped in a way which represents the Celtic cross. Now, that's a cross that we were told was given to us in 3 AD by St. Patrick.
Right.
When he came to the island to Christianize it. But no, this symbol, the Celtic cross, is a symbol which is thousands of years older. Then we started to understand what the particular points were within this design. Because if you lay it flat and build across it, then you start creating harmonic chambers. And then the utilization of certain frequencies that is very, very potent in these places. And then we began to understand when these places were to be activated. I'm presently on the hunt for several chambers across Ireland that I can find that are still intact, because we have a masculine side and we have a feminine side. All the feminine that I can find so far have been destroyed. I feel it was an attempt to seal the doors from what was on the other side.
Well, because go ahead, and then I've got a question for you here.
I have to say that from this other side, we had St. Patrick, we had St. Columba and everything else, who we were told in the modern age belief system is that they were coming to Ireland to rid Ireland of the pagans. Now, you've got to remember that this is the Celtic Church. The Celtic Church adopted and was very much an umbrella group for those ancient pagan beliefs. They incorporated them into their belief system. So St. Patrick isn't coming per se to get rid of the pagans. St. Patrick was coming to Ireland to get rid of the serpents, the snakes. Well, why would he be coming to Ireland to get rid of snakes? There are none. There never were snakes in Ireland.
So who's he talking about? Who are they talking about?
There are serpents behind the doorway, though. And that was a big wake-up call for me whenever, through the experiences that I had on that blasted island north of here. And that then opened the door to allow me to understand things a little differently.
So
are the serpents here to help us or to harm us?
That's the thing, John. This whole serpent worship was had a double-edged sword. They were absolutely full of knowledge and everything else, but there was another side to them as well. That was something that that was very, it was a great enlightenment to learn that that there was a double edge to this. Now, from our perspective, from what I can see from all of this, is that to access these doorways, you had to use your intuition. And intuition was a big thing for the Neolithic Irish, that intuition was seated in the right hand hemisphere of the brain. That's your feminine, seat, we find that above all frequencies that were tested, there was one particular frequency, which was 110 hertz. And that particular frequency, whenever used in that particular type of environment, shuts down your left-hand hemisphere of your brain, your masculine side, your communicative center, and opens up your right through 110 hertz. A frequency, I might add, which was utilized through chanting and only reached through the masculine voice. So the masculine, the male shaman, if you like, were chanting, but utilizing their feminine side and their intuitive side to access the doorways to the other worlds. Then we see, through there was a lot of things right across the globe where we can see this connection and utilization of the serpent and the feminine and things like that. And of course, all this alienation that occurred with that, which was very unfair, I might add. But yes, so from our perspective, we can see and understand certain frequencies that activated these places and when they were to be activated. And this crossover of power from one to another.
Just going back, Barry, if I can, you said that the serpents had two sides to them.
Yes.
Could that not be said of the humans as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Everything is a two-side. Everything is two sides.
Is there a harmony to be had here?
All I can tell you, John, from my experience, is no, there is not. Nothing good will come of that.
No.
From my personal experience, whenever I ended up in a situation that I had no control over, I got to see it for myself, and there is no good to come of that door.
But if we speak in hypotheticals, yes. If you were to have control over, would there be a harmony to be had?
No.
So there is no harmony there at all?
My experience, John, hypothetically, no. There is not.
You're pretty clear cut on that answer. We've got some people in the chat room who are saying things about the serpent as being a consumer, a devourer, the serpent as monster, things that are better left alone. The devourer, the female chamber on the left is undisturbed, Lynn said over there. Would this have any kind of correlation to, I know when we wrote about Exodus, we talked about how in the book of Exodus, Moses writes about the Shekinah glory that comes down, which is supposed to be this female aspect of God, and this is happening roughly 1400 BC. when he wrote these things down. So is this the kind of aspect you're talking about, this female aspect? And I've heard this before about the female aspect being shut out or being closed down, or the male taking dominance over it. And that, and now you're equating this female aspect to something that's much darker.
The feminine, that seat of our right hand hemisphere was always seen as being feminine, and those attributions were always then subsequently connected. The feminine, of course, led to the darkness. And again, you know, I'm saying that was very, very unfair, because that was not meant to be the case. The feminine in real females right across the planet were alienated, if you like, and that was a very, very unfair connection to make, because everyone has that duality, and that in itself was where the problems lay.
Now, I don't want this to be a negative word, but having tampered with it or having touched it, having approached it, having using some intuition to get there, do you feel that you have disturbed things that ought not be disturbed? When you come back so quickly to John's question with an immediate no, no, there is no harmony here. There is no harmony to be found. Is this because you have personally touched something that ought not be touched?
Yes. And I have to say that that is an experience that I have no wish to go back to.
Now, you had mentioned that to me before. Is that something you don't even want to talk about tonight on the show? Give us an idea of what you're talking about, just for the sake of not just morbid curiosity, but out of knowing and gaining a little knowledge. What is it, in terms that you feel comfortable expressing this, what is it that you encountered?
I think, Scotty, the only way I can really describe this, because I don't have a word that really describes this to its fullest, and that's the problem that I face, is that within our language, within our great Queen's language, John, I don't have a term that will properly describe what I experienced, and I'm going to try here and describe this as throughout all the TV shows and everything, and movies and all the rest, we hear this word being thrown around, evil, and all this, and
right.
That doesn't even come close, and I have to say it was one of the most enlightening experiences I've ever had, but it was also one of the most terrifying, And that I will certainly never, ever forget.
Are the words chaos and madness, could they be attributed to your experience?
No.
In the terms of...
There was intention behind this, John.
Yes, exactly.
There was no chaos.
Intention. No, but an internal chaos. And what I mean by that, I mean the ability... in the human form, in the biological form, to use these words now, to be terrified beyond terrified, as you use that word very loosely there, evil. We're using words which to the normal person have connotations attached to them. I'm looking beyond that connotation. Yeah. I'm looking beyond that and looking to the actual repercussions of those words. And looking at the repercussions in the mind, the consciousness, the chaos that would rain down on one and send one into a painful madness. And is that something that could be attributed to what you perceived and what you felt at the time?
My gut instinct would tell me no, John. And what I also got to see as well was that even the ancient Irish, as in the Celts, even tried to close this doorway and were unsuccessful. So even from their perspective, their paganistic ways. And I really don't I think they were more cued in than what we give them credit for. They even tried to close that down. The ancient Celtic church came along and they built on top of it, which was a big mistake. And the place was shut down and rebuilt on another island. So, you know, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot that we need to understand of our ancient heritage, and there's a lot which is now starting to be uncovered, which is really startling in its own right. There you go. That's the experience that I had, and that was that, and that led then to the writing of the Council of Three, which really delves behind that doorway. And the repercussions of it.
How connected is this doorway that you're speaking of to, I remember a few years ago, you and I were talking about when you were writing in the midst, the Mist of Gods, mm-hmm. and you were talking about the things that are beneath our feet.
Yes.
And that almost became a phrase like, you know, if you want to put it in that setting of thinking like the old movies, it's like, beware the old ones. You know, it had that kind of the things beneath our feet, you said. Is this, and this is when you were doing all the cave exploration and the going deeper into the old mines in Ireland and places like that around the world. Is this the connectivity that's being made? These doorways are things that are connected with the things beneath our feet? Is this what you're talking about?
There is some of them have a direct contact. It's very important to be aware that, like a magician, a lot of the stuff that happens in the air, for instance, and the west coast of Ireland, you know, and I'm now talking about UFO phenomenon and all the rest, the west coast of Ireland is lit up, and the past, I would imagine 15 years has really seen a growing number of activity right along our west coast. And while the magician plays his hand and keeps his hand nice and high, we fail to recognize what's going on with the other hand. This was always a thing. They don't come from above. They come from below. That was something that I spoke about in the Mist of Gods, about these things that come from below, and their need to keep this planet intact, if you like. That was a big thing, you know, through a lot of the whole UFO encounters and all the rest. All these fantastically looking different creatures. We're all saying, "Oh, this to better humanity and save the planet and everything else." Crap, the whole lot, I say. They really do not care whether we live or die. Their main concentration, their main focus of the effort is to make sure that we do not destroy the planet. They need the planet. They come through the planet into this one, into here and now. They need the planet intact. We sit on a nuclear engine of 44 trillion watts of power.
Yeah.
These gatekeepers were put in place to protect what was down below coming through. There in itself is another story altogether.
Well, let's tackle that after this break, folks. You're listening to Barry Fitzgerald here on the Intrepid Radio Program with John Ward and me. We'll be back in just about 3 or 4 minutes.
It's a lot like riding a two-humped camel. Intrepid Radio with Scotty Roberts and Dr. John Ward. Intelligent talk.
The ancient pre-Celtic culture of Ireland left their legacy in the standing stones and mystic places of the Emerald Isle. This June 12 through 23, come to Ireland with history trippers Scotty Roberts and John Ward, Barry Fitzgerald of Ghost Hunters International, Micah Hanks and James Swagger as they take you on an off-the-beaten-path tour of Ireland's ancient megaliths, castles, and sacred places. There is so much more to Ireland than the Blarney Stone and Guinness. Get off the well-paved road and into the mysterious, haunted, thin places of Ireland with the guides who can take you there. We have 15 seats available and they are already starting to book up. So go to exodusreality.com and get your place reserved today. That's exodusreality.com or call 651-468-8115. Come with us to Ireland.
Hello, my name is Patrick Sullivan. I'm a boxer and a Guinness drinker. Now, it's come to my attention that you lads in America only drink Guinness on special occasions. So let me tell you about this special occasion that finds me drinking a pint of Guinness. I was fighting Michael the Hammer Halleck when the referee stopped the fight in the fourth round due to excessive bleeding. As the referee led poor Hammer, covered in blood, to his corner, all I could think about was I was going to win for the first time in 57 professional fights. However, the referee soon made the discovery that it was my blood covering old Hammer. And what can I say? I'm a bleeder by nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, in 57 is not much of a special occasion. And that's my point exactly. You can drink Guinness any day. Sure, it's dark, but it drinks smooth and easy. You may even find it refreshes your spirit. So don't be so precious with your pints. Grab a Guinness, because it's good to drink.
Guinness Stout, imported by Guinness Bass Import Company, Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, and if you think the Irish only bleed Kelly Green, just come to one of my fights.
When we make Beyond Natural dry dog and cat foods, we start with real meat as the first ingredient. We leave out corn, wheat, and soy. And we own where our dry food is made. 100%. Can other brands say all that? For nutrition you can trust and your pet will enjoy. Does your food go beyond? Learn more at PurinaBeyond.com.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, ALANROBERTS.com, to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hi, I'm my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
The fourth annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you year after year with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
You can take the boys out of the city, but you can never plug a dam in Denmark with your thumb. Intrepid Radio, with a haphazardly focused Scotty Roberts and the rollicking adventurous Dr. John Ward.
Sticking their fingers in the hole in the dike of humanity.
I gotta tell you, sometimes that hole in the dungeon is a rather dark place to be. We're doing our best to Flashback to Waters of the Matrix of Confusion in the world today. John, how is it on your end of the dike?
It's absolutely beautiful over on this side of the dike. The sun is just appearing above the palm trees. It's absolutely gorgeous here.
Oh, fantastic. And so,
pond.
And so Barry, you're going to have sunrise there in about another hour. It sounds like
still dark here.
Still dark.
But, beautiful clear skies. The stars are shining, so we're expecting a beautiful day.
Fantastic. And folks, if you've just tuned in for our last segment, we've got Barry Fitzgerald on the line with us live from Dublin, Ireland. And we're talking about, just about all the work that he does. Now, there's a question that came in related to things that you were talking about in the last segment. Shanko over in our chat room asks, do thin places, you can define that more, but the thin places or the sacred places of Ireland, that always seemed so romanticized yet so mysterious to me, those thin places of Ireland where the atmosphere, if you will, is thinner and the veil is thinner. We'll let you explain that a bit, but he asks, do the thin places in the ancient rock formations represent the possibility of dimensional rifting? That's the first part of his question. Or is there potential energy nodes for gateways, he asks, and maybe something to do with the quartz and all of that there. I know James Swagger talks about that a lot. Now, between the worlds and or dimensions, could ancient aliens, if you will, and or ghosts encounter or encounters represent one and the same type of thing?
I think those particular questions, there's three elements to them, and all three are linked. So yes, yes, and yes to the entire lot. What we tend to see, and this is something, you know, that we read about in our ancient books, are stories of people who ended up walking into these doorways and some people never returning, and some people did, but much later. It was interesting that when I was getting married on the reservation in California there not so long ago, the medicine man stopped to show us the sacred mountain and described the same tales that we have here in Ireland of people disappearing into these gateways and not reappearing for some time. This is a pattern that we see right across the world, right down into New Zealand, where there are mentions of this within the Maori traditions as well, and right up through.
I've got to wonder about those places in New Zealand, as they are probably they've been less tainted by civilization, if you want to put it that way, than Ireland or even the Americas. And you got into the wilds in New Zealand. Those places have got to be pretty remote.
You do, but if you look at David Paulding's book "Missing 9/11" from the East Coast to the West Coast, you'll see a numbering rise of people who disappear without a trace, and many are never recovered again under mysterious circumstances. And that is something that we should really be paying attention to. I know, you know, this type of phenomenon still occurs in Ireland in the modern day. Let's look at 2 years ago, an American tourist, and not to scare anybody away from going on the tour, we had an American tourist who came across, was in Donegal, and she left one hostel to go to another. And she never made it. She had vanished for 4 days, and she was there was a huge search on all the mountain rescue locals, local Gardaí police officers, and everything else were all looking for her. Couldn't find her, and she was found on the fourth day, and this was the mysterious thing: found on the fourth day in the house that was 300 yards away from the search headquarters. Whenever she was questioned, we never got to find out what exactly occurred. How did she end up in that property? How did she end up in a place that had already been searched twice? And her father flew in from the States and released a small statement, and she was taken back to the US and we've never been able to hear tell of her since or find out what exactly occurred and why she disappeared for the 4 days. But that's that again is nothing new. This is something which is continually occurred, because on the trip to Ireland, I'm going to be bringing you to a place known as St. Patrick's Chair.
And yes.
St. Patrick's Chair is a place where, again, St. Patrick went to fight the serpent and rid the place of the snakes. It's a place that has this huge stone structure in the middle of the forest. And I might add, this is a forest that when you go to, it feels different. It feels like a place out of time. Very bizarre. Even though you look at everything, everything seems normal. Something doesn't seem right. And in 1996, there was a guy walking around there with his dog around this particular forest. And he was taken. 3 days he was gone, and he appeared on the third day in the middle of the search party that were looking for him, him and his dog. The experience that he had really destroyed his life. I feel sorry for the guy. But when we went to examine it with Legend Seekers, we discovered that the St. Patrick's Chair was not the main focal point. That was the halfway point, because there was another place where these things come from. And we can find that as well in the pattern of the trees, because a huge acreage has taken the form of a spiral.
Oh, you were telling me about this, that the whole forest around the place spirals out.
Yeah. That's something which is very, very unique. Something we'll be experiencing, and hopefully lose no one along the way.
We could try to Scotty.
We'll just have a waiver signed. If you are picked up by the Fae or aliens while on the trip, don't wander off from the group, especially while we're in the Enchanted Forest.
Accept no sweets from strangers.
That's right. You will have to provide your own breadcrumbs for finding your way back. And if you do return 4 days later, but you're 100 years older, that's not our problem. There you go. Sorry, go ahead. I was just making a little light.
So that in itself, you know, is something which is not that rare in Ireland. In fact, just the other day I was told of accounts of people within the modern day, as in the last few months, of strange things happening to them as well in regards to these ancient doorways. Now, I was in a cave system last weekend, and there were three of us up there, and something bizarre happened to us as well, because within the 30 feet of us being together, we could not hear each other call. And for 45 minutes, I was lost from the other two. And we were 30 feet apart.
Oh, my goodness.
And this was a hard-to-reach cave system. It's an interlace of different tunnel networks that lead through the mountain. But within 30 feet, both inside and outside of the cave system, we could not find each other for 45 minutes. I can't explain it. I don't know what on earth was going on. All things were running through my head. I think to myself, what on earth? And I thought, how am I going to explain this to this guy's wife?
Oh, my goodness. It may have been just you that was lost and not them.
Well, it could well have been. It was very, very, very strange.
Do you attribute that to, really? Because it was interesting. You were telling me not long ago about when you go to Ben Bulba, and the valley there is kind of a horseshoe shape. And on the right, you said, is very light. But on the left, you said it's dark and it's almost palpable. You get out of your automobile and you said intuitionally, there's almost something that wants to tell you, you really shouldn't go here. And you talked about Yeats having spoken about the djinn being very connected without really knowing all that much about the djinn, that they were starting to make those connections. Is this what you're tying some of this to?
Yeats was very, very well versed within his work. And he does hint at a lot of this within his poetry. And Yeats is very, very au fait with Ben Bulbin and things like that. Now, Carrickhill is another place where there are passage chambers. And these passage chambers date from around 4000 BC. Now, we'll be going there as well. And the valley itself is split in two. You do have this right hand, on the way into the valley, on the right hand side, we have one of the chambers which sits high on the mountain. And it's exceptionally unnerving, I have to say. I'll use that particular term. But by all means, I will be there. I will be exploring that as well. But it's taken me 2 years to get this far, because I was taken by the other side of the valley, which is almost a total reverse in polarity. And so I've been exploring all of that, because there was a chamber there as well, which was meant to be a doorway to this other world. And I had a few bizarre experiences with that as well. But it's not until you get your feet on the ground you start exploring that you start having these strange things that will start to occur. And one of the books that I wrote, Searching the She, I placed myself in the environments in which a lot of these ancient tales had been taken from. And I wanted to see, was there anything of that ancient society that may have lingered through till today? And I have to say, Scotty, that I was flabbergasted by what I saw. The very fact that I got off my ass and went and looked for it, I was surprised about what I saw. I wasn't there to collect data.
Right, right.
I wasn't there to use my cameras and do all this stuff. I was there to experience.
Right.
And that book is about the experiences.
Well, that's what makes it very interesting as well, because you are going in not necessarily as an objective journalist, just to take your notes about something and examine and research, which seems to be all the craze with people nowadays, but you're going into experience.
Yes.
And that's going to give you a different, if you will, experience than you're going to get when you're going in for a different purpose.
Yeah.
I would now correct me if I'm wrong, but I would tend to think, and John, you can chime in on this too, because you experience some of this in Egypt as a man who has to maintain your feet in both worlds a bit, the academic world and then, of course, the more metaphysical world. If you are going in to examine something or research it, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, you're going to end up not getting anything special happening. But if you go in and you, if you will, and I know there's some danger to this, so let me use the right language, if you open yourself up to it, or you leave yourself available to experience what is there, and you can put, if you know how to do this, I suppose, obvious protections, but you're going to get something very different. Is that correct?
I would say so. Barry, I know we've discussed this at length at the last Paradigm Symposium. And hopefully we'll be able to continue the conversation again this coming Paradigm Symposium. And by the way, if you haven't got your tickets, go to paradigmsymposium.com. No, you're right there, Scotty. And I think, Barry, you agree on this, that if you find a location that you know or you feel intuitively that there is, shall we use this flimsy word, something there, you can either go in prepared or you can go in unprepared, or you can go in knowing that you're going to experience something, and you may come out of it with absolutely nothing because you've actually gone in with this preconceived idea. I've listened to the entire show now, Barry, and I know we've discussed this at length before, but I'm always reminded, and I'm going to go back to this harmony. I know you said no to it, but I'm going to go back to this harmony question. Because throughout the whole show, I'm reminded, continually reminded, and Scotty, you'll be more up on this because of your book on the reptilians and on the
right.
And that is that our ancient ancestors did have a harmony with, shall we say, call it the serpents. There was an acknowledgement of them, and that acknowledgement was, of course, a guarded acknowledgement, and that goes hand in hand with what you're saying, Barry, that one has to be very cautious of what they have to offer and how they can manipulate, etc., etc., etc. And I do believe that our ancient ancestors were more than aware of this. And hence the reason why we have these portals, doors, call them what you will, that are either closed off, sealed, the use of, shall I use this word loosely, magic, symbolism, that is there to purposely seal them, to protect us, protect the everyday man. And I'm instantly drawn to the fact that you talk of St. Patrick coming to cast out the serpent from Ireland. And it smacks me in the face of this Catholicism, this early Christian rhetoric, where they wanted to stamp out all the remnants of the ancient ancestral cult, and I use that word very strongly now, cult worship, because we did respect and acknowledge this other side. And when we talk about the serpents today in our modern world, we hear about Hollow Earth and so forth, and the serpent creatures that visit us, etc., etc., etc. And as Sean Coe went on about ancient aliens and the spirit world, the paranormal, the supernatural, and everything else, it's all associated with it. But there seems to be this lack of respect, this lack of acknowledgement that, and which you talk of very eloquently, Barry. I think you've got a 100% firm grasp on this acknowledgement and respect for them, that there is a tangible side to it that shouldn't be played with. It should be respected, and one shouldn't play with it, because the repercussions of doing so, and then I refer to what I said before, leads to chaos. Because it was chaos that, even when I refer to the ancient Egyptians, that they kept at bay. And when we look at the underworld where chaos dwelt, it was full of serpents. And each serpent had its role to play. It had its specific name, its specific role. And they were kept within the underworld. And the battles ensued each day. And each night, as Amun-Ra, the sun god, would travel through the darkness of the underworld and would slay the serpents each day as the battle for the heavens would take place. And it was the triumphant battle where the actual serpent itself would be slayed, which would be then hailed a new day as the sun would rise on the horizon. So, for me, again, I hearken back to these ancient tales and look at the relationship between them and what you're discussing, Barry. And for me, that's at the center of some of my own personal research, as you know. So, yeah. Did that answer your question there, Brother Scotty?
I forgot what my question was now. But it came damn close, I'm sure. It's all fascinating stuff to me. These are topics that once you start getting even into the side topics, as we're talking about this, they could make entire episodes. So, it's all very intriguing. And so, Barry, what I'd like you to do with the few minutes that we have left here, tell people a little bit about your new project, your new book that's out, The Council of Three, and tell them what you're up to and all of that and what this book is about, where they can get it.
Well, the Council of Three is available on charmstealer.com, and it speaks about, it tells a story of these doorways and what lies behind the doorways and the implications of dealing with things, as John says, haphazardly. That book is available now, again, through charmstealer.com. We are working with Legend Seekers. We start the new stories on the 25th of April. And we have some film projects coming up there as well. I'm also working on a documentary in regards to this unusual sound that's being heard from Ireland, and not only Ireland, but right around the world, this hum that's being heard. I'm doing an investigative documentary onto that.
This is the same as the big sounds that have been heard for a couple of years or in different places around the world.
Not quite. There's trumpeting, which is being heard, which I have no time for. This is a different frequency. I was able to capture it actually on audio, and it's coming in at 67 hertz. It almost sounds like a diesel engine several blocks away, but will travel many, many tens of miles across the land. But its origins, of course, we've been able to isolate down. And that's going to be a very, very good documentary. We're hoping to have that finished by the end of 2015.
Well, in very short, what is it?
I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet. But what I can tell you is that this year alone, we have had 33 beached whales along our west coast of Ireland. There is definitely something within the ocean.
That's interesting. I know that they said that some of this humming sound, some of the flocks of birds that would drop dead, the schools of fish that would wash up dead, all had something to do with magnetite and the changing of the Earth's magnetism and things. So it'd be interesting to see. We'll wait to hear about that. So what Great. Have you got up other than your trip to Ireland with John and me and Micah and James Swagger this June 12th through 23, which there are still tickets available for at exodusreality.com. If you want to come and join us and have us all host your trip to Ireland to megalithic stone sites and some of the thin places and Leap Castle, you can join us by going to the website over there. And you're going to be at the Paradigm Symposium in October, the 1st through the 4th, speaking. What else have you got going on, Barry?
I have a tour which is taking me to Scotland just before your own at the end of April. Sorry, the end of May. We'll be there exploring the world of the paranormal within Scotland. I'll be back in Scotland in October for an event up there just above Edinburgh. I'm looking forward to it. So with the symposium and with your tour and the other tours, I'm keeping very, very busy.
Sounds like it.
With the new books, of course, I'm working on the latest book, which is delving into the world of the fairy and these incubus attacks. So that's going to be a great read. It's turning out to be a fantastic story. So I'm looking forward to getting that one out later in the year.
Well, fantastic. Well, Barry, we want to thank you for being here, for getting up so early in the morning over there in Ireland and joining John and me. Good luck on everything you got going on. It's great to talk to you, and we'll be talking to you again very soon.
Thank you very much, lads. You take care. John, take care over there in Egypt, and we'll speak soon.
I always will, Barry. You too, brother. You too, brother.
All right.
Take it easy.
Take care.
All right. Have a good night. All right, folks, that was Barry Fitzgerald, and he told you where you can find him. Go to charmstealer.com. You can hear all about it.
Or climb into any cave and just rap on the wall.
There you go. Now, that's some interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to the Ireland trip because Barry's going to take us into some of these places. Not to go tampering with things we ought not tamper with, but there will be that opportunity for some people if they wish to engage in that.
We will be engaging, and we will be.
Of course, we will.
We will be enticing.
Yes. Well, folks, you know what? This just about wraps up our show for tonight.
And, it's the eye of the mountain.
It's coming up pretty quick, and John, we've got. I think that's playing in the background there. So that's our cue to get on with it. And so, folks, you can check with us on Thursday for the Situation Room with Rocky, John, and me. And then again here next Sunday night. Say goodnight, John.
Keep watching over June's sons. This is to end in fire, then we shall all burn together. Watch the flames climb high into the night, calling out, Father, oh, Simba, and we will watch the flames burn on and on.
should die tonight. We should all die together. Raise a glass of wine for the last time. Cooling out Father Road. Prepare as we will. Watch the flames burn over and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire.